This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to a spooktacular edition of Qué Golazo as we relive a weekend full of tricks and treats in Europe's top leagues as Manchester United lift their Premier League hoodoo while the Halloween horror show continued for Tottenham, Barcelona and Juventus fans. I'm joined by Jimmy Joe Exotic Conrad and Heath Luigi Mario Pierce to discuss this and much, much more. Qué Golazo, which is going to be pretty good, begins right now. Hey everybody, welcome to Qué Golazo. Happy Halloween. I hope you had a fantastic Halloween, and if you have a family and kids and stuff, I'm sure that you're busy right now stealing all their candy. Joe Exotic, how are you?
I'm doing great, Larry. Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's a little lonely in the space that they've currently put me in, and it's excited to get out and talk about the Budafield game, or what's the I tried.
We'll get there, Joe. We'll get there. Listen, take care of yourself over there. But hey, where is your brother, Luigi?
Inside the house. There's a whole thing happening outside of my hands. This was given to me. I was not given an option for my costume this year for Halloween, but good to see you, Larry. This seems, I don't know if a daily pod is really something that you would actually do. It seems a little bit of a nuisance. So hopefully you'll have a few annoyances throughout the, about the episode today and just kind of let us know how you really feel. Cause that's one thing that Larry always does is he always lets us know what's on his mind.
Yeah, I don't care for this, to be quite honest. I'm just doing it. But anyway, welcome, everybody. This is Qué Golazo, our weekend recap. Heath Pierce, Jimmy Conrad, Joe Exotic, Luigi Mario. Happy Halloween. If you're watching this live on YouTube right now, I can't emphasize this enough. Smash that like button, please. We want to hear from you as well. Get in the comment section, share your thoughts, ask a question, get things off your chest, and our producer, Des, will throw the best comments on screen. And this is so anti-Larry David, by the way. Larry would be like, go away, leave me alone. I don't want anything to do with YouTube, whatever that is called. But anyway, let's begin, everybody. Let's talk. Oh, by the way, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, which will be later on as well, very nice of you, subscribe to Qué Golazo Pod as well, and take a minute to leave us a glowing rating and review. And by the way, you can do that right now while you listen. You don't even need to wait. So let's get going here. Premier League shakeup. Manchester United needed a big win. And to be honest with you, we said it in the weekend preview, so did Tottenham, because Nuno is really struggling right now. And Manchester United get it done. 3-0 against Tottenham. Spurs were pitiful. Jimmy Conrad, Joe Exotic, did Manchester United turn a corner or are Tottenham just really that bad? How'd you see this one?
I'm tired of this roller coaster, Larry. You know, this El Sacico roller coaster with Ole Gunnar. It doesn't look good for Nuno Espirito Santo. I know we'll talk about him in a second. But with regard to Ole Gunnar, he got his tactics spot on. I really feel like that's what proved to be the difference. But it was risky because he only started with three attacking players, Bruno Fernandes, Edinson Cavani, and Cristiano Ronaldo. And you have Luke Shaw as your wingback, and you have Aaron Wan-Bissaka on the other side, who isn't really known for his offensive forays. At times he can chip in, but doesn't do it as consistently as I think anybody would like. But it worked. They had Fred McTominay, McFred in the middle, and they really went with three attacking players, and they scored three goals against Tottenham, which really speaks more about Tottenham and the fact that they only – or actually, I don't think they got a shot on goal for the first time at home in a home game since 2013, which is shocking. So there's a whole lot to unpack, I think, from the Spurs side. But fair play. What you ended up having was some top attacking talent in this world doing the business and getting the job done. Because Bruno Fernandes, one of their three attacking players, set up Ronaldo. Ronaldo set up Cavani. And that was all the goals they needed until Rashford came on and really put the cherry on top for Manchester United. But they needed a response, the Red Devils, and they got it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, interestingly enough, under the gun, he went with that back three, which I thought was really interesting. to take that kind of chance under the microscope that he's on. It makes you wonder what his fear was of making this effort to say, hey, the problem is in our attack. Yeah, we're going to create chances. Yeah, the attack isn't that cohesive, but we have world-class talent. Why not just lock down defensively or go with the defensive lineup and then force our team to stay in games longer, stay in moments, and then allow our world-class stars to have to or force them to have to create these moments. We've seen that they can do that. And so switching to that back three, I thought was really important. Maybe it was a roll of the dice. Maybe it was something that he was like, kind of like, I got nothing to lose now. I'm up against kind of the ropes and I got to show something different, but it worked. And again, on the flip side, I know that Espiritu Santo's job is now being discussed by the board. Seems a little unfair. If you took the job and somebody said you get Harry Kane and somebody said you don't get Harry Kane, those are two different jobs in terms of the Harry Kane that you're actually getting. So I feel like that's some of that's really unfair of him. He had a lot of injuries early on in the season too, in terms of his back line depleted. I think it's a little bit unfair what he's rolling out, though. I do think that he is also obviously at fault, same way that Ole's been at fault and Arteta, as I know we'll discuss, who's been at fault for a lot of the failures of Arsenal up till now. But with regard to Manchester United, again, I just really like the idea of them bunkering in or blocking down, closing off passing lanes, really making it difficult. They rolled out a defensive formation, as Jimmy mentioned. It was very defensive. And that then allowed them to make the game became more clear, right? And it was focus on defending, keep a clean sheet. And they did that. And we know that Manchester United are, I think, one of the worst in the league in terms of keeping clean sheets. So to be able to do that against a Spurs team who, yeah, they're not very good right now, but it's still Spurs nonetheless. And you still have world-class talent on the other side of Spurs, albeit not in good form right now. Just overall, I think it's a dangerous game to play to have given him this, because now maybe he's starting to figure it out. I don't know how much you can figure out from that. But again, similar to Juventus, where they were happy to play ugly, that's not working. I thought maybe that was going to be what they adapted to. If Manchester United can actually embrace if all the egos can buy into this type of system, they can make it difficult for teams, and they're always going to get their options or opportunities to score with their world-class talent.
I just want to jump in really quick, Larry. Thank you for the platform to rediscuss. What I find interesting is that when we were discussing Antonio Conte taking over Manchester United, we looked at their squad. Conte only likes to play a back three. He likes having wingbacks. There's no way this Man United team is set up to play that way. And Ole Gunnar rolls out a back three with two wingbacks, and it works. I'm like, is this insane? Also, I will say that this is a lineup that I think we're going to see the whole week, because Atalanta plays a back three, so now you can play them a little bit more straight up. And then against Manchester City, we saw that they struggle against Chelsea at times, who have a back three and two wingbacks. And I really feel like we're going to see this formation moving forward. And the issue with regard to everybody buying in, Luigi, is you have a pissed off Marcus Rashford, who now has to probably get relegated to super sub status. You got Greenwood, who didn't even get off the bench. And you've got these, and Jadon Sancho, who they paid $80 million for. Like, you have all of these players at your disposal, which is a great depth problem to have. But I think it's going to be pretty difficult to keep these guys happy if you're only electing
Chelsea.
To play.
So did Chelsea, was doing the same thing, and they figured out how to get results last year. I mean, they had a bunch of expensive players that came in, and they were all being rotated week in, week out. Nobody knew their status, especially in the attack. But defensively, they were sound. And then you go, well, we'll figure it out. If we got to move a couple of you, then we'll move a couple of you. But if it leads to some sort of greater results, or if they see themselves trending forward, all of them can be like, all right, we could buy into this for one.
All right, let's put the pin on United for a second, because they did get that win, so pretty good for United. But Harry Kane, I got a question for you, the Larry David stare down here. Are you Harry happy at Tottenham right now? Because it's kind of you looked very disinterested there, Harry Kane. For the comment section, everybody watching and listening, will Nuno still be in charge at Christmas? Reply yes or no. Even a Y or an N. We would love to hear from you. What do you make of Nuno and Tottenham? But to Luigi's point, it's not necessarily all of Nuno's fault. There was the stubbornness of Levy wanting to keep Harry Kane, and that also restricted and froze so many other options they could have done with the money and kind of resuscitated their squad. So I ask you, boys, let's begin with Joe here. First of all, how horribly wrong was our friend Fabrizio? Sorry, Fab, to throw you in under the bus here when you said that Tottenham won the transfer window by keeping Kane. I don't know if that is true. What do you think, Joe?
I think that we love him. He's fabulous, Fabrizio. But I would say that he maybe didn't take into account the mental side of him being forced to stay, that there was going to be some drop off, that you basically killed this guy's spirit, because you didn't let him go. He had done everything that he had set out to do and then some for Spurs outside of winning a trophy. That's fair. But everything else that was being asked of him, he was delivering, both on and off the field, top captain, loved representing his club. And now he just wanted to make a move for the last few years of his career while he still thought he was in his peak. And they nixed that. And I could see why that could impact him. Now, you'd like to think he's going to get over it at some point, but I don't think that he is. And I think it's hard for him to regenerate. And I'm sure that he continues to get hassled by Spurs fans every time he doesn't score. Every time he doesn't play a good game, it just continues to pile on and the pile on, the pile on. Like, you should have just left then. Because imagine what they could have done with that $120 million if they just would have sold him and could have got some other players to go underneath that maybe would have re-energized the team in some ways, right? So there's a lot to really take stock of that I don't think Nuno's fault at all as manager. I think he just kind of inherited a situation. And I'm kind of pissed as a Newcastle supporter because now that Tottenham's looking for a manager, if you're Erik ten Hag, let's say, from Ajax, you could have probably looked at Tottenham's team and figured you're actually interested going, I'd rather work with that group because at least there's some talent there. And then you look at Newcastle, you're like, nah, you know, there's
yeah,
like,
but
there's
Jimmy, like you got deep guys. Pockets. You got deep pockets over they there in Newcastle. That'd pockets. Be pretty fun.
That's true. I get it. I hope that happens. Maybe I'm reverse jinxing this. We don't need to get into Newcastle talk because it's just a sad state of affairs right now. But with regard to Nuno, some of the signings that they did invest in haven't really worked out. And I'm looking at Christian Romero in this particular instance. I didn't think he looked great. I think he's had more than enough time to catch the speed of the Premier League at this point. And he's just one of many that I just don't, you know, Heath always says it. You need a lot of players that are playing at sixes and sevens and eights every game to win. And I just don't feel like Spurs had enough of those guys and they haven't had them consistently all season long.
Yeah. The last thing I would say on that is it just feels like the perfect storm, right? So new manager comes in, he's trying to figure things out. Then you have the Harry Kane debacle, which is much bigger than anybody would ever think it is when you have somebody who is going through that sort of emotional roller coaster, and it's a little bit of a fight with the board and who's going to stay and who's going to go, and then what those resources could be redeployed, as Jimmy mentioned. And I don't want to repeat all of that, but the thing that I think is also the twist to all of this is just like Jimmy said, there haven't been players that are playing well, that even just played well last season. And so if you're Harry Kane, you're coming back in, you're not scoring. What do you think happens? You want to do more, but now you're saying like you feel like the whole world is against you, right? Like there's just this sort of like, karma type thing where it's all kind of falling back on you. The games are getting more and more. The expectations are going up for every match for him that he doesn't score, as Jimmy mentioned. So I think it's just a tough situation where it's a little bit of a perfect storm that you don't think would happen, right? You go, you keep him, you know, we'll sell him on again in a bid and the team will be fine. And then they go through injuries, they go through the changes, and then he's out of form and you go, oh man, this looks really, really bad. Whereas if two of those boxes went well, the team was getting results despite him, then he could step in and feel like he could find his rhythm again. But as soon as he stepped back in or the expectations went back on him again, they're expecting him to score multiple goals a game. And if that's in your head as a striker, I don't care what strikers you are. There's very few that aren't form strikers in the world, right? He's a natural goal scorer, don't get me wrong. But he's a form striker. When he's in form, he's just sort of like Mo Salah is for Liverpool right now. It just seems like everything goes in. And when it doesn't, you can see how far he's sort of drifted away from that confidence that he has when he is in form.
Yeah, I just want to add one thing as we move on to the rest of the Premier League. People need to remember this, especially Tottenham fans, especially those that were expecting some kind of magical entertainment wonderland with Nuno. That's not him. That's not who Nuno is. You go back to his games with Wolves, very good defensively, relying on the counterattack, relying on the strength of Raul Jimenez and Traore. It's exactly the same blueprint with Tottenham. And when Harry Kane's not working out and Son is like kind of being a little sporadic, it's going to be the same thing. You get what you buy. That's exactly what Nuno is. Now, to your point, it's not totally Nuno's fault, but you got to remember something. This is not a manager that relies a lot on what he wants to do when they have the ball. And they got caught out yesterday. They got caught out. So I want to remind everybody that comments question. Will Nuno be in charge at Christmas? Why or and? How about an answer from our boys here? Very quick. Not even an explanation. Yes or no, Joe Exotic?
I'm going to say he's going to get the sack. Is that yes or no? I can't even.
Will he be in charge at Christmas?
No, he will not be in charge. And I feel like we've seen this with managers, with Mourinho and Pochettino. So maybe the manager isn't the problem. That's what I wanted to add.
There you go. How about you, Luigi?
I think he will be in charge. If they're not, I think that that's a bigger problem to think about with the board than it is on him.
Yeah. Very quickly, by the way, on Cavani, because Cavani was very good. And only on Cavani was talking about him and saying, I've been here more or less 3 years as a manager. Tuesday's training performance by Edinson Cavani is probably the best performance anyone has put into a training session. The old man led from the front. I mean, I know how hard Cavani works. Our producer Des is a big Cavani fan. What do you make of that, Luigi? Cavani was very good. A nice little triangle, him, Bruno, and Ronaldo, who I thought was excellent.
Yeah, and I like the idea of him playing up with another striker. He obviously can't cover the same ground, but if you start with two players, and again, those are starting positions, right? That's pretty fluid in the way that those guys move. I just like putting him in the best spots. We saw with Bruno Fernandes earlier in the year in Greenwood, the way that they were moving off of each other. That combination, especially if you're going to play with a defensive kind of setup or formation, that system of play in the attack has to have those players closer together, and you put him into those good spots. And again, it just took one moment of Ronaldo feeding him through, and you can see as soon as he's on that stride, you know he's going to finish it. And when you have a player that can finish with their one chance that they get, I think you got to keep him close to the field. Obviously, as Jimmy mentioned earlier, it sucks for the seven other world-class players they have on the bench. But yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I'm a big Cavani fan, so I don't have to convince myself about his value. And when he's healthy, I think he's one of the top strikers in the world. And I say striker because we look at Rashford, Greenwood, Martial. I don't know if those strikers, Jadon Sancho, is really their best spot. This is actually a guy that knows how to play the striker position. And what I think really helps, you building your team around Ronaldo. So whether you love it or not, if the guy's going to play, you got to figure out a way to get the most out of him. And when what Cavani does really well is runs off the back shoulder of the center back. So he helps stretch the defense a little bit, which then allows for me, in my humble opinion, as Joe Exotic, to have Ronaldo kind of pick his spots as to when he wants to come back and check for it. And actually when he wants to maybe get a little bit closer to Cavani to either win the second ball or play off of him in a different way. And then there's a bigger gap, I think, for Bruno Fernandes to do his work, and you can get your width from Luke Shaw and Wan-Bissaka. It kind of works out nicely if it continues to play out this way. So we'll see how the rest of the week goes. But yeah, Cavani for me is super important. And if Rashford wants to come in, anybody else has to come in, they're going to have to do some of that thankless work by running the channel so Ronaldo has more time and space on the ball. Same with Bruno.
Well said from Joe and Luigi, and all Man United fans care about at this point is 3 points, and that's exactly what they got. Hey, by the way, Joe Exotic, Luigi, and Larry David, keep those comments rolling in. We want to hear from you. The comment section is a blank canvas. Paint it with your hot takes, questions, complaints, shout-outs, and while you're there, click on that subscribe button. We want to hear from you. All right, let's talk about, by the way, Des, let's put that table up on the screen so we can look at some other results, including Manchester City and Liverpool dropping points. Patrick Vieira came to City and delivered a great performance, and they beat City and Liverpool. You thought it was going to be good at the beginning, and Brighton just kept on plugging away. So the winner there, I guess, is Chelsea. Of course, we'll talk about them in a second, but what do you make of Liverpool and City dropping points there, Joe Exotic? They, you know, we thought it was not necessarily a sure thing, but the way that they were going, we think it was going to be hard for Brighton and Palace, but that did not happen.
No, I'd say that Laporte helped out Crystal Palace quite a bit. Gave a bad pass that led to the first goal by Zaha. Great to see him back on the starting lineup and scoring.
Harsh red card there.
A bit of a harsh red card, but also no. I mean, he kind of pulls a Tim Melia, for everybody knows what the hell I'm talking about, for a goalkeeper from Kansas City who did that to Roldan. Kind of arm-barred him, you know, Sergio Ramos style. Did a little wrestling move there. He would have been in. I think Zaha would have been in. So the red card was pretty quick, but I thought it was warranted, all things considered. Laporte, bad defensive positioning, I think, get himself caught by somebody he should know is looking to do that. So even City, though, with 10 players, you think, they're pretty good. They're pretty good with 10 players. They probably could outplay a lot of the teams with 9. But I just thought Crystal Palace from that point on didn't sit back. I mean, a little bit, of course, but they also tried to pick their spots and attack. And got, I think Conor Gallagher has been fantastic for them. He scores the second. That game's done and dusted. And I think with regard to Pep Guardiola, they're now in their own little crisis at the moment because they just got bounced from the League Cup as well, a competition they won for 4 straight years. So I don't know. I'm not actually all that worried about City, but for them to lose back-to-back games is quite a rarity.
Yeah, for me, the main thing that I was impressed with is we were obviously joking that, or at least I was joking, that Crystal Palace were going to be the team that got relegated on with 30 draws this season. But they have played really well for long periods. Again, they got a ton of help by Laporte, but being sent off. But they were already up 1-0. They got that early goal, mm-hmm. and they were going punch for punch. Obviously, Phil Foden was playing up top in that false nine. Kevin De Bruyne didn't really particularly have a great day either in terms of his passing. You know, they looked off the pace, and it's weird when you see City, who are so good at passing and understanding the pattern play and knowing where the exit is and where the out is and how to get to the other side and unbalanced teams. It didn't look for like for long periods, it didn't look like they were on the same page and they were going to have to scrap out perhaps a 1-1 out of that in the first place. I didn't see them really coming back and scoring multiple goals because they just didn't really have that rhythm. And then obviously with the red card changed everything for them. So I'm happy for Palace because their position in the table, I think, is should be better than where they're currently at. So to get those 3 points could be a changer for them. Obviously had some great circumstances that fell their way, but to be able to fight through that against, as Jimmy said, a 10-man Man City side is better than probably half the teams in the league at 11. It's just a great result.
Keep that like button, by the way. Keep on pressing that like button. We want to hear from you as well. Let's talk about Arsenal for a second. Still remain undefeated. Luigi smiling. I'm surprised he didn't come as Mario, get that red as well. But Luigi is smiling. Arsenal doing their thing. They really, really look good. Really good against Leicester City. Continue to climb up that table, by the way. So right back at you, Luigi. Your Arsenal continue to do well against a very good win against Leicester City.
Yeah, and again, there was something about the energy in this team right now that I have a ton of respect for. And it wasn't so much about the energy and excitement overall in the game, but it was willingness to be first to the 50-50s. You know, when you look at the ball that dropped down to Smith Rowe that he finishes, it's just that sort of momentum where it feels like they're playing downhill at the moment, where they get to everything first, they win the tackles, they spring out quickly, and it just seems like they're thinking a half step faster than their opponent, which is something that I complained about for them for a long time, is just being late and last everything, almost like they were trying to play too pretty or weren't respecting the game enough. And so this sort of scrappiness is starting to create their own luck where, you know, they go into challenges and the ball pops up to them, or, you know, a bad pass and they're picking it off and they're going to go and creating chance. So overall, I think it's just a really good Arsenal side, and they're not great, but they're just very good. And we're starting to see some consistency out of that. And if you can be good constantly with the quality of players that they have, you know, they're going to keep on climbing the table.
Yeah, when I think about consistency in that word, I think Ramsdale is providing that for them in goal. He obviously made some world-class saves in this one. I thought
one of the best performances all season by a goalkeeper, right, Joe?
No question. I mean, I just think that when you want to have that sense of belief, or if you're on that type of role and that momentum that Heath is talking about, when you have a goalkeeper behind you that's making those types of saves, it helps continue to propel that momentum on both sides of the ball. And that's maybe what Man City, just to throw them back into the conversation, didn't have. Ederson didn't make that save on Zaha's shot when he should have. And obviously that might've changed the whole flow of the game. I do want to give a shout out to the young players who are stepping up. Bukayo Saka had, on his 100th appearance for Arsenal in all competitions, he had his 21st assist. That's more than any other player over that same amount of time that he's been playing for the club.
Pretty good.
Pretty good. And then you have Emile Smith-Rowe, who has his fourth goal of the season in all comps. And all of those have come in the last 7 games. And he had the same number of goals in 33 games last season. So you got these, not only do you have everything that Heath has described, and you got a hot goalkeeper, but you got your younger players that are starting to show some of that consistency. And that only bodes very well for Arsenal as they move forward to try to get back into European competition for the next season.
Well, Arsenal are 6th in the table, 17 points joint with Manchester United, only 3 points away from Man City. And West Ham, by the way, who keep on climbing. Now they're in a Champions League spot as we speak. Convincing, destroying, annihilating Aston Villa 4-1. And so that, by the way, as we look at the table, Chelsea, Liverpool, City, West Ham, Manchester United, Arsenal. Final thoughts from the Premier League before we move on. How about you, Luigi?
No, only that it's one of the more exciting times heading into this time of year. There's not one clear and out favorite. You're seeing Liverpool drop points, a team that I didn't think would drop points again for the next 8 months, and the way that they're attacking and beating teams. And so, yeah, just an exciting period for me within the Premier League.
Yeah, I just jump on that and say Virgil van Dijk, still not at 100% for me. I don't think he looks as sharp as he can. Liverpool dropping a 2-goal lead at home, even though they had quite a few beautiful goals called off in the second half to maybe get all 3 points. There is something of a question mark there. And then I want to give a shout out to Reece James. You know, I thought he was fantastic against Newcastle.
What a banger.
He scored a couple bangers, you know what I mean? Shoot. Just showing that promise. And I'll say this, that if Manchester United starts to veer into this new, you know, new trend of tactics with 3 center backs and 2 wing backs, I don't know if Wan-Bissaka is going to be the answer in that spot. I think they're going to need somebody like a Reece James moving forward. So keep your eye on that. I want to give a shout out to Rafael Varane, who came back after 3 weeks. And I feel like he's such a calming influence to that Manchester United defense. So if they want to win anything of consequence, he's got to stay healthy for the whole season.
Yep. And helping Manchester United keep a clean sheet in that win against Tottenham. So there you have it. That's your Premier League for the weekend. We're going to take a break. But if you're watching on YouTube, that literally means we're coming back in half a millisecond. We'll be talking about Barcelona, Serie A, much more. If you're listening on pods, it's a little longer break. But we will be right back with our weekend recap Halloween special. We'll see you in a minute.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Hey, everybody, I told you we'd be back super soon. Thank you so much for being part of the show. Make sure that you subscribe, hit that like button, smash it. I don't know, whatever you got to do, but make sure that you stay with us. I mean, don't smash it too much. I don't want you to break it. But we continue our weekend recap. Let's talk now about Barcelona. Well, first of all, the Super Clubs asterisk, the Super Clubs in turmoil, Barcelona and Juventus. By the way, the first one is Barcelona and Alaves. They tied 1-1. Sergio Agüero, by the way, was admitted to hospital in that game with cardiac issues. So our best thoughts to him as he recuperates. The Xavi latest, by the way, is that Al Sadd, the club, said in response to what's circulating recently, you know, management reaffirms that Xavi has a 2-year contract, et cetera, et cetera. But all arrows are pointing for Xavi to soon make this move. As for Verona and Juventus, Verona win 2-1. Simeone, Gio Simeone, that is. 6 goals in 2 games. 6 career goals against Juventus as well. Incredible. And the top 4 finish for Juventus is in serious doubt. I would say top 6 right now is in serious doubt. So thoughts from those two clubs, Barcelona and Juventus. Two big, big clubs, historic clubs, and they are in trouble, Joe Exotic.
Well, I would say Juve feels like they're in a better spot because they actually have a manager with a ton of experience that I mean, feasibly knows what he's doing. He's already proven that in his career. Barcelona don't, though it does seem like Xavi's coming in. And what I'll say very quickly about Barcelona is that they've taken 16 points from their first 11 games of the season. That's their worst start at this stage in the 3-point era since back in the early 2000s. So yes. And that's the time when Xavi started to emerge. So maybe it's a perfect time for him to come back and help save the team. Memphis Depay, though, scored a banger against Alaves. I think you have to build around him if he does come back in, obviously, and you try to figure it out. And if they can find some money to spend, you know, in probably next summer, then maybe they'll have a good team next year. This year, though, it's looking a little thin. I don't think they have the depth. I don't think their starters are of that class of Barcelona that we know. It's kind of like when you see Fellaini at Manchester United. You're like, nah, he doesn't. Yeah, I mean, he's a good Premier League player, but he's not a Manchester United player. And I feel like when I look at Barcelona, I see a lot of that. Hey, he's okay. He's solid. But is he a Barcelona player? And they just have too many of those types of players out on the field. I guess I'm thinking about Eric Garcia, who just really has been unimpressive for me in particular. Sorry, I shouldn't have thrown him under the bus, but I did. I'm Joe Exotic. Everybody suck it. Okay,
Joe will hold no prisoners. You like that pun?
I don't know. That goes kind of deep now that he's actually in prison. But I will say that Barcelona, I feel like it's still in a lot of turmoil. Whereas Juve, we were just talking about them being in this type of peril 6 weeks ago. Then they went on a nice run. And everybody was like, all right, it's all good. We're back to it. And now they're back under the gun a little bit. I think they just ran into a Simeone who's playing, Simeone, who is just scoring bangers only right now. I guess he had a tap in, but 6 goals over his last 2 games and kind of the wrong time to catch Hellas Verona.
Yeah, Natalie Cross obviously saying that Xavi might want to reconsider that Barcelona move. I mean, I agree with that. I feel like perhaps, and maybe I'm a little bit jaded just because of Serie A. We've seen so many legends go back to Serie A itself, and then they just get cycled out. They get their like one shot, and then they go to, then they find their rhythm in like other clubs in Serie A or Serie B as actual managers if they want to be managers. And so I'm a bit worried about him and his status as a legend of the club coming back during a time that it's really, really tough. But I know James Binge was really excited, saying it was a great time for him to arrive at the club to be able to rebuild those types of things and maybe pull back the philosophy and the belief around the club. And maybe that starts with, you know, La Masia and some of the things that need to be rebuilt or fixed there so that they're not losing that talent or potential talent to other academies around the world. But yeah, Barcelona for me was one that I looked at Kun Aguero being potentially an answer. So when he goes down, obviously missing most of the season, and once he's ready to play, obviously has this heart issue. I don't know what it is. I was trying to read a lot about it online, and people were saying it had happened before, and they were, you know, in the last couple of weeks he had a little bit of an issue, or years ago he had an issue of some kind, and not a great look. And then when I think about just sort of where he's at in his career, I started to think a little bit more realistically and saying, well, what could he actually possibly do for this team and the quality that they have around? You know, he needs players that can run at him where he can spin off the shoulder and he can play in and out of spaces, 1-2, get around the guy, quick diagonal runs in space, because he scores a lot of goals from, you know, difficult angles where he gets a slotted ball in, a diagonal little this and that. And if he can't get into those spots, you know, he's not going to carry the team from outside the penalty area and things like that. So I'm wondering if he was ever going to be the right answer. Obviously with Messi, that's a completely different type of combination play between the two of them. But once he leaves, maybe I was just putting too much on his shoulders of what he could contribute. And now with this issue, it just seems like, as Jimmy said, you look at it and you go, is this Barcelona quality? Is this Barcelona quality? And now you look at some of these players and you say, yeah, they are Barcelona quality, but you know, the person next to them isn't. And that doesn't, that means that they're now not Barcelona quality. And you can't have a bunch of players that need players around them to bring them up to Barca quality if you're going to have a bunch of individuals or not be the team of the past. Obviously they'll never be the team of Messi ever again. And then with regard to Juventus, you know, I still like the way that they're scrapping games. Just so you guys know, for anybody that didn't watch, when Weston McKennie's on the field, Juventus won 1-0. They lost that game. They lost that game 2-1 though. Overall, but no. That jokes aside, they again, Jimmy said it's an informed goal scorer right now, but it doesn't excuse the fact that I think they still need to be able to find a way to consistently keep those runs going. If they're going to play ugly, if they're going to scrap out results, it's a good identity to have. But then you don't really get to have those off days. That becomes the MO of the team. We've seen the Chelseas of the past, Atletico Madrid, others that are just sort of like, this is what we do now. And now it's going to be up to this next game, the next match, the next couple matches in Serie A for them to show that, yeah, you know, it's not going to happen every time. That's difficult to do, but we're going to bounce back and the new us is going to win more than we're going to lose.
Here's one for you. Is it probably maybe the fact that also these teams, these other teams across both leagues are becoming more competitive. They're understanding the game a little better. Their seasons, their culture in both leagues. Like, look at Real Betis on one side. We talked about Fiorentina as well, kind of resuscitating themselves. So here's a question for you, everybody watching, comments. Which club is less likely to finish top four this season? Juventus, who are right now ninth with only 15 points, or Barcelona in La Liga, who are also ninth with 16 points. And I'll throw that question to the boys here, but answer in the comments section, which club is less likely to finish top four this season, Juve or Barcelona? Joe, what do you think?
I'm going to go Barcelona. I have them finishing third in their Champions League group. I thought they're going to drop into the Europa League. That could still happen. They got Dinamo Kiev this upcoming week in Ukraine. Obviously, we'll have our Champions League preview, for that one coming up on a future pod. I think that Juve have the ingredients mostly to have success. They've added some pieces. If Chiellini and Bonucci can stay healthy, I think that makes a difference. But they've given up a lot of goals, and that's very unlike Juve in a lot of different ways. I'm seeing a stat here where they've conceded 15 goals in their first Serie A, in their first 11 Serie A matches of the season for the first time since 1961-62. And that, it has to hurt them, I feel like. And Allegri, I mean, if I was the coach, I would take that personally. That whatever I'm doing at training isn't working to kind of shut that down, that side of the ball, when they have plenty of players that can go out there and put in a shift to get a clean sheet. And I know that Szczęsny wasn't great to start the season, but he's been okay since then. And now you just got to get that side of the ball. And then almost, this is, sounds crazy, and I can't believe this is even going to come out of my mouth, but...
Well, you're Joe Exotic. You can say anything crazy.
That's true. Allegri, I feel like, should act like Carole Baskin. I'm just kidding. Allegri should act like Ole Gunnar and almost maybe try to add one more piece to your defensive side so that you make sure you've tightened that up so you can kind of go forward. He did it in the Champions League against Chelsea, and obviously it worked to great effect when they won 1-0. He might have to do that domestically as well, because I do think that they have the talent to go forward, but there's just something amiss with this team. And until they can unlock that, I think they'll get top four, but I don't think they're going to be challenging for the Scudetto.
Well, Allegri has taken Juventus to an all-week getaway training session, by the way. So it'll be interesting to see there. Heath, very quick. Luigi, Juventus or Barcelona, who's not getting a top four?
Weirdly, I would want to say Juventus in this case, but I'm having trouble figuring out who the four would be, right? When I look at, because I just think about Juventus and their competition for a title every year. But when I look at Roma, when I look at AC Milan, Inter, I guess maybe I'm going to go with, actually, I'm going to stay with Juventus on this one. I think Barcelona are the most likely, but I also think there's a potential that Juventus don't finish in the top four. When you think about the teams that have stepped up, Napoli in that context, AC Milan, Inter Milan. And then when you look beyond that, you've still got your Roma, you've still got your Atalanta. And I think it's going to be tough for Juventus to get out of that pack. That a fourth place finish, I think, would be the top for them, but very well likely could miss all of that. When I think about the team, though, it seems old. They don't have that ability to stretch teams quickly. Yes, they do have a few pacey players. All those players are up there in age when you think about Cuadrado and others like that. They just, like Jimmy said, need some of that fresh blood defensively. They need to have some of that blood in transition as well. Obviously, you have Bernardeschi, Chiesa, some of these players that can do these things. But we're talking about Juventus here, you know, a dominant Juventus for a decade that it just feels like they're at the end of an era, and very much like a Barcelona where they're just in this transitional phase that they've got to go out and find some differences. And hopefully with Ronaldo leaving, they have some wages or wage capabilities to be able to go out and spend.
Well, let's just update you with a little more roundup of Serie A. By the way, Roma, AC Milan in the final minutes here. And AC Milan lead 2-0. Zlatan Ibrahimovic powering his 400th club career goal. A great one as well. And then Frank Kessié with a penalty, but Theo Hernandez got sent off. So they're just holding on with a 2-0 lead against Roma with a few minutes to go. Atalanta and Lazio drew 2-0. Let's have that table on the screen there. Oh, there's a good question here, or is that a comment? Bonucci and Chiellini been doing and slandering Ronaldo since he left. He was their top scorer and provided his assists. Yes, I mean, Ronaldo leaving, Ola is never going to be a good thing for anybody, especially when you're lying him so much. So, but I think it's more than a Ronaldo absence here. If I'm being perfectly honest about Juventus, this is more of a collective issue where nothing really much is clicking. I mean, they're really not creating as much. They're a little boring. And when they're boring without being creative, this is what happens. Joe, I don't know if you wanted to add something before we carry on and look at this table.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're going out of your way to slander somebody, it's probably because you care, you know, that it did hurt you. It hurt you, yet that you had spent all that time building something with this player, and then he decides to leave in a whim.
And he made a good point. He said, listen, I'd rather Ronaldo said, I'm leaving, like, at the beginning of 100%. The summer, as opposed to, like, with a few days to go. Like, that's a good point.
100%. So, yeah, I just wanted to add that. With regard to
any Ronaldo matches, has a family to feed. He's got 19 kids.
That's true.
You got to go where the money is.
There's a lot to unpack there. He might actually have 19 kids. You joke, but we just don't know what that guy is.
Hey, Joe, I'm surprised that at this point. Joe, I'm really surprised at this point. You haven't slandered Carole Baskin yet.
My sentence is longer, so I just got to be really thoughtful about what I say here. I do want to add, though, Napoli have won 10 out of their first 11 for only the second time in their history. They are absolutely cruising. And I like what I like about Napoli is that they're really balanced on both sides of the ball and got a whole bunch of different goal scorers. And then obviously Victor Osimhen, if they're going to win the Scudetto, he's going to be a big reason why, because he's been so consistent in front of goal. Milan, fantastic under Stefano Pioli. We'll see if they can figure it out in Europe. Inter Milan, they had Joaquin Correa score. He's been kind of uneven since joining Inter, I thought, from Lazio, but he's got a brace in this one, which I think is good news for that. Atalanta 2-2 against Lazio. So that was a good game, by the way. Atalanta scored very late to make that 2-2. But it's crazy. And then Zlatan, I got to give a shout out. He scored his 400th goal domestically. Of those 400 goals he scored in his career domestically, 150 of them have been in Serie A. So I think it goes to show that he likes to score in Italy.
One of the things I like about his game still is You see with most strikers as they get up there in age, they just become a traffic cone defensively, right? The game goes past them, and then they pop back in when they're ready to get
involved.
Just
save Ronaldo. You don't have to save Ronaldo. Yeah.
you know, you guys could ad-lib that one. But he actually at least tries to shape the game a certain way with their press. And what I liked about this game against Roma and AC Milan and Roma was that it seemed like it was very managerial. It was very tactical. They both knew how the other was going to line up, and then they spent the week trying to figure out how they could break that down. So knowing that Roma was going to sit back deeper, Milan seemed to have answers right away of just like, oh, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to beat it. And it's very rare that you see two teams, what I thought, especially in the first 30 minutes, doing well against a team that was setting up to beat them, right? In terms of like, oh, we know their tactics. They know our tactics. Usually that leads to one team sort of maybe not playing well. Both teams I thought were doing okay at the beginning of that game, but AC Milan really seemed to be tactically sound in the way that they were pressing against Roma, allowing Roma to play square balls off of goal kicks and then pressing really, really well. Obviously, it led to a couple chances early on for Roma, but as Milan got their goal from Zlatan and kind of moved on from that, they just look very complete, and there weren't really a whole lot of gaps. That some of those gaps that I saw last year would just seem like they were surviving and they didn't actually have the plan to win a Scudetto. That they ultimately fell short of doing. This year seems like it's going to be a lot tougher for an Inter Milan or a Napoli even to run away in early January, February from them in the table.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a very competitive Serie A as it continues, by the way, in AC Milan, all but securing those 3 points. We'll try and keep you updated, but it's almost done there. By the way, smash that like button and leave us a comment on Que Golazo YouTube. This show keeps on growing because you are part of it. So we want to hear from you, comments, questions, etc. All right, let's do a roundup of La Liga. Real Madrid and Vinicius Jr., not called up by Brazil. Vinicius Jr. hits another great performance. That's 2 goals again against Elche. Atleti with a very good win against Real Betis. Real Betis have been doing their thing. 3-0 against Betis. And the Basque Derby, which is still going on, right? La Real against Athletic Club. But let's get that table going there, Des, as we discuss La Liga. We already talked about Barcelona, but Real Madrid, look at that. Real Madrid, Sevilla, Real Sociedad, obviously, as we speak, all 24 points. Atletico, 22. And then, as you can see, lower and lower, and Barcelona nowhere near in sight. Any comments from here, Joe Exotic, on La Liga?
Yeah, I just want to give a shout out to Vinicius. A little disappointed he didn't get called in for him in particular. He's got 6 goals so far in 11 La Liga games. That's the same amount that he's had in the last 2 seasons combined in La Liga. So fair play to this kid who finally is starting to believe in himself in a way. I'm sure he always believed in himself. You have to, I think, if you play for Real Madrid. But to the point where he's actually being effective. And I noticed body language. Like when he played the previous seasons, if he tried to do something by himself, you could just see Benzema. Like, this guy will never pass me the ball. He throws up his arms like he's Thierry Henry playing for the New York Red Bulls. And that's a shout out for Heath over there. And just you can sense the frustration from Benzema. Now, when Vinicius does something, he's more often than not making the right decision at the right time. And that comes with age and experience and getting that repetition. And when you match that with the world-class talent that he definitely has, now you're getting to see the fruits of that talent and of that labor. Now, I do want to give a shout out to Atletico Madrid as well. They had a tough game against Betis. As you can see in the table there, Betis was near the top. And Manuel playing well on both sides of the ball. Manuel Pellegrini, well organized. And I thought that was Atleti's best performance of the season. I thought Yannick Carrasco in particular was insane. I thought he was so good. And if they can continue to get that type of production from him, Joao Felix finally scored. It had been like, I don't know, 3,000 minutes since he scored something crazy in between goals. But when he comes on as a super sub and scores, they are tough. But they had their back line. They got Jimenez, Hermoso, and Savage. All of them were healthy, and I think that made the biggest difference in terms of very similar to Varane joining United, where you finally have some people that know how to keep things calm and organized, and it really kind of just permeates through the rest of the team and all the lines of the team. And I know I'm saying that as a center back, so take that with a grain of salt, but I do think it's really important. And then when you have guys playing well on the attacking side of the ball, I just thought Atletico were lights out, so I just want to give them a shout-out.
I do want to say 2 things. One, Luis, when you roll those R's, it sounds like that tiger over there. I just keep hearing every time you roll those R's for any of these Spanish clubs. And I got to say, you know, as the most Italian guy on this episode right now, you do hit that those Spanish words a little harder than you do some of our Italian words. So,
well, Heath, I am Spanish, if you remember. Yeah, so it is my first language. I got to hit it. Hey, I got to hit it every time.
That's fair. I'll give you that.
Give us the score updates, Luigi.
Look, the score updates for
yeah, we got El Shaarawy, by the way, just scored for Roma. There's your R for you, meaning that Milan's just leading 2-1, a few seconds left, and La Real is leading 1-0 against Athletic Club de Bilbao. That's Isak with a penalty. Go ahead, Luigi.
Oh, I mean, you just scared me there. After I went on my monologue on AC Milan, I thought you were going to hit me with the whole, guess what, man? Sorry. They got no chance now. They just gave up all 3 points. But no, you know, overall, it's funny. We talk about Joe Scally, for example, right? Guy got an assist for Mönchengladbach this weekend, and he's played like 10 games as a professional. And we're like, get him into the national team immediately. And we're talking about Vinicius Jr. going from being a player at Real Madrid to being a world superstar and doesn't get a call up. And it just shows you sort of the depth that certain countries have, or in terms of you know, fitting players in, and just sort of how far we have to go with our U.S. national team. It just reminded me of that. I remember, I think it was Emerick Laporte that I was doing some stuff with a couple years ago when he first got to City, and he hadn't been in the national team yet. And I was like, here we are, one of the biggest transfer into defender at the time. I think he was in the top three or something like that. Doesn't play on his national team and is playing at Manchester City. And it just blew my mind, the depth of players and quality of players that we have. I know that's a little bit off topic, but I wanted to just to point that out, that it's, you know, it seems like a player like that, but when you look across the board in terms of who Brazil has in attacking options, they're obviously never going to be short on options. And if you're not a right fit, or they don't think you've been informed long enough, or for whatever reasons, it's a little bit shocking.
Yeah, it's very difficult to argue against Coach Chiche. I follow Brazil, the national team, quite a lot, especially because of CONMEBOL qualifiers. And you can argue with him. Obviously, still Brazil undefeated in the table, lead the group. But it's tough for Vinicius, especially when you bring in Coutinho. And you completely don't even regard Vinicius Jr. He was part of the window last time around, but he saw less and less minutes. Hopefully, he will be part of the World Cup squad because he definitely deserves it. As Luigi mentions, he's in a world-class category at this point, doing some great, great stuff. Game over, by the way. Sorry there, Joe, Roma fan, exotic. Milan win 2-1. So there you have it. Zlatan Ibrahimovic and AC Milan continue to do well in Serie A with 3 points there. Athletic Club down to 10 men, by the way. Iñigo Martinez, second yellow card. We won't be able to give you the final score on that one because we are nearly done. By the way, I want the final thoughts from both of these. Let's begin with you, Luigi. Give me final thoughts.
Well, you know where I'm going to go with this. We are at silly season of Major League Soccer. I want some MLS. If Jimmy's going to go on this one as well, I'm not really sure what his final thoughts are, but we've both been on this theme recently just because for the American fan, it's a perfect time to get into something. If you don't want to watch 34 games of the season, guess what? You can watch the 33rd and the 34th to figure out who goes in the playoffs and if a team in your market is going on. And also, you know, there's a really cool Detroit City FC is doing great things in Detroit in the lower divisions, and they just hosted their first ever black soccer clinic for the black soccer community there, and it was one of the first ones I had at scale. So I wanted to point that out and give a shout out to Detroit City FC for doing that this weekend as well.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I just jump in and talk about MLS as well. I just want to give a shout out to the Red Bulls and Columbus Crew, who both got big wins to actually keep their playoff hopes alive. So we'll see what that ends up happening there. Zello Rayon, I don't know, did he score on this one? He feel like he scores every single game, but he only scores bangers.
And so the one before that, season contender.
It's unreal. So there's some big games coming up to Heath's point. If you're going to give any shine to MLS, this is a great time to do it. There's a lot of intrigue and a lot of great narratives. And
also, Cade Cowell's goal, 18-year-old from the Central Valley, California, drives the whole way down the pitch, swims through two players and finishes it, gets the third goal in a 4-3 win for San Jose over, who was that, Real Salt Lake, I believe?
Yeah, over Salt Lake.
Who are trying to get into the playoffs. So, yeah, just another storyline of a guy who just turned 18, a future national teamer, I'm sure, for us, was one of the players that if we go back 6 months, was linked with Barcelona and a bunch of other big clubs and is having another solid season for a teenager.
Yeah, just really quick, Seattle and Sporting Kansas City tied on top of the table with two games left in the Western. So getting that number one seed is important because you get home field throughout. Kansas City will play Austin and then Salt Lake, and then the Sounders got the Galaxy and they have Vancouver Whitecaps on the last day of the season. So there's a lot to play for. Obviously, a lot of intrigue between those two particular teams after that Tim Melia slam on Christian Roldan, body slam that was, and the fact they only got one suspension or a red card, which should have been at least two games, maybe even three, was a little bit suspect, or sus, as the kids say today.
I love it. I love it. And that was our Halloween weekend recap. I hope you had a fantastic day, weekend. I want to thank Luigi. What a great custom, Luigi. A real mustache there, by the way. That's Luigi's actual tash. And shout out to Joe Exotic, who, by the way, the entire episode, hugging and caressing his tiger. Never dropped him.
It's once. My real mustache as well. Thanks. Thank you, Larry. I appreciate it.
Is it? I love it. Well, it's a slanting a little bit. If it's real, it's
you know what? It's a caterpillar. Don't worry about it.
Joe Exotic, thank you so much, brother.
Thank you.
Louis, there he goes. Luigi, thank you.
I can't get my gloves back on. So it's a good thing that we're ending, because I keep having to take them off to type on the keyboard to look things up. And like, it's just, yeah, thank you.
Oh, look, Joe is going away. Luigi can't take his gloves off. Thank you,
Larry,
so
it's
much.
Me. It's Jimmy. It's
oh, my God,
me.
It's Jimmy Conrad. Jimmy.
Amazing.
Now you just look like Olivia Newton-John.
Okay.
Whoa. He went out of character. He went out of character and ruined the show.
It's Carol Baskin in disguise. Everybody, thank you so much. Thank you for being part of the family. Hey, by the way, these two will be back on Monday as we have a real special fun USMNT live recap show. More information on that tomorrow, man. It's a Champions League week. We'll have a preview, recaps, and so much more. Have a great, great rest of your Halloween, and we will see you next time.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents.
Hands where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it all on fire.
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violent Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10/9 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.